Last Word on Today FM.
Mary Lou McDonald, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. So, I suppose where I want to start is, what type of Taoiseach would you be? Well, that's what I'm going to make the interview focus about. But how do you actually get to be one? Because if we're looking at all the numbers, what sort of coalition is Sinn Féin going to be able to set up if you persuade people that there should be a change of government?
So, yeah, so the first step in it is winning sufficient confidence and mandate for the people so that the numbers add up. I think if you look at the opinion polling today, this is a very, very open contest. I think it's game on now for those of us who believe that it is time for a government led by a party other than Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. Sinn Féin is the party that can deliver that. So I'll be asking people to support us on that basis and on the basis of our programme for change. And, you know, I've made no secret of the fact that my proposition, our proposition to the people is ideally government without either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. That is the best outcome in my view. So we're asking people to vote for our candidates, but of course to transfer onwards to other parties, individuals who similarly believe in the opportunity for change. And then the rest is largely in the hands of the electorate.
You say ideally. So if it just happened that, remember before the last election, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael said they would not go into power with each other and they ended up doing so. Could it be that if the numbers were to dictate that you couldn't put together a coalition of the left, but that you could go into power with Fianna Fáil, that despite all of the things that have been said in recent weeks, and despite the deep differences on things like housing, for example, that you would look at the potential of doing a deal with Fianna Fáil because that's all the numbers allow?
Well, I want, and I dearly hope that the electoral outcome will be different from that. Well, we'll come to that maybe in a moment. But you see, I think at the beginning of this campaign, Matt, there was an assumption by Micheál Martin and Simon Harris that they were just going to jive back into government buildings, that it was very much a foregone conclusion. I never thought that was a real analysis. I think after, what, almost 14 years of Fine Gael in government, a housing crisis, a cost of living crisis, so many of our young people now deciding that they can't actually get their chance or build their future here. I don't think they were ever going to just simply swan back in. And I think now the polling figures have kind of caught up with that reality. I mean, Micheál Martin seems to be the only person absolutely intent on putting Fine Gael back in government. That's his only plan, right? He seems to be singularly the person who believes that we haven't had enough of Fine Gael leading government. I disagree with that. And I think if you look at the figures, if you look at the different strands now of Irish politics, I think subject to people coming out and voting accordingly, I actually think we can build a coalition beyond Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael.
Okay, but what particular skills would you need to do that? If you were to, for example, have to bring in Labour, Social Democrats, Greens, into a host of independents, people before profit or whatever, that sort of coalition building is exceptionally difficult. You had 37 TDs going into this Dáil. You lost four of them along the way. How would you be able to persuade 90 people into a government and then hold them together when they all have different ideas that they want to have implemented?
You see, that's where the programme for government is at the heart of your efforts. I mean, before entering government, you have to have an agreed sense of priorities, an agreed sense of mission, an agreed sense of the whole modus operandi of government, how you relate, how you interact, including where you settle differences of opinion, difference of emphasis. All of that goes without saying. But I think in the first instance, you have to sign off on the must do and the must deliver items. I also believe in this collective cabinet responsibility. I think that has to go beyond just taking collective responsibility for things. I think you have to have a collective drive to achieve. So to my mind, particularly the issue of housing has to be a shared goal, a shared ambition. We cannot have another 5 years of the crisis and fiasco that we have endured. Our society can't take that, in my opinion. Our economy is suffering from that without a shadow of a doubt. So I think building a coalition government isn't just about numbers, although the numbers clearly are a prerequisite for it. It is also about agreeing collectively the priorities, the drive, and a very, very collegiate approach to how we actually deliver. Because the next government, whoever would be in it, I don't think can go back to the people again in the face of record homelessness, runaway costs for houses, rents that are excruciating. I mean, I don't know how people actually manage to pay them in many, many instances.
You talk a lot about the communities you represent. So could you define for me what you mean by those communities? Because I wonder then, as Taoiseach, would you only represent those communities or would you represent everybody?
No, as Taoiseach, you represent everybody. You're the head of government. And of course, you have not just a reach, but a responsibility beyond your core constituency. And I think that really, really is important. I'm an Irish Republican, a United Irelander. I lead Sinn Féin. We are the party of the Irish working class, urban and rural. We represent lots and lots of young people, you know. But the art of good governance is not just to create a programme for government, but to deliver those political priorities in a way that brings clarity and consistency and in a way even that can rally support even from people who may have been sceptical of your abilities to actually deliver. And I want to say the next thing, and I hope this doesn't sound arrogant because I really don't mean it as a statement of arrogance. I mean, our team is really, really good. I am really proud of the team that I lead. And I know over the last couple of years, the last 2 years in particular from the opposition benches, they and we have worked really, really hard to put together policy platforms that have been built up collaboratively, that have been peer reviewed, and that we can actually deliver. So you asked me, like, what kind of Taoiseach would you be? How would you lead government? I would say the core requirement is to be ready and to be prepared. And I feel that we're ready for this opportunity now.
If you were to be in government, it would be made up of various left-wing parties and centre-left parties. But does that bring about something of a contradiction in that to have all of the money that you want to spend, you would have to adhere to capitalist philosophies, which raise all the revenues, which then you differentiate yourself maybe from the other parties by having a different approach to spending them?
Well, I mean, we live in the system that we live in. It is beyond my powers of persuasion to dismantle all of that.
Some of those would go into government very much want to dismantle that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the focus is on the ground that is shared, a shared commitment to equality that has to go hand in hand with a commitment to prosperity. When you represent working people, you want them to have good jobs. You want them to have decent work. That means that you have to have a thriving economy. You have to have a thriving enterprise economy. You might say, well, those are contradictions in terms. I actually don't think that they are. And I would define us very much as a party of the left, as they say. But we're a working class party. We're the party of working people. And there's an expectation that you deliver, therefore, quality employment and quality public services. The things that we talk about are sort of the basic building blocks of a good society. But they are also the things that sustain and drive a really, really strong economy. So I don't think you have to make a selection between those things. Of course, we'll have differences with other parties in terms of the role of the state. We are against the privatisation so beloved of Fine Gael in particular, Fianna Fáil also. We believe that you have to have a strong state and in the case of housing, to return to that theme, a lot of the difficulties that we find ourselves in now is because successive governments led by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were quite happy for the state to step back and to leave everything lock, stock and barrel to the market, then to vulture funds, and were more concerned with, you know, advancing the interests of developers or big corporate landlords rather than actually...
Well, in recent years, the state has actually spent more money on housing than those institutional investor funds have done. But if the state, if there are to be 50 to 60,000 homes a year built, it's going to cost over 20 billion a year. Now, surely the state can't do all of that. So what role do you see for private investment, which often comes from overseas, in the way that the multinational jobs come from overseas as well?
Yeah, I think it depends on the nature of that investment. I mean, our big argument and the big problem that has occurred is these vulture funds coming in and swooping up properties from under the noses of people who would otherwise buy them.
The state actually does that in bigger numbers than these so-called vulture funds does.
Well, the vulture funds have done that. They have done it repeatedly, and it took very considerable effort on our part to force the government to in any way disincentivise that practice. Of course, stable, longer-term investment, international investment, will be welcome to Ireland, and we've got pension funds. Investment, in other words, that is looking for a sustained, reasonable, long-term investment profile and therefore return. Of course, that's going to be part of the mix. The private sector, developers, smaller builders, SMEs, they are part of the mix as well. And then the state. And
because, you know, the state has on occasions, on many occasions, there have been housing estates that have been built, and rather than individuals or families getting the opportunity to buy, they found themselves outbid, not by these investment funds, they found themselves outbid by the state.
Yeah, and that is a function of the supply issue, absolutely. I mean, fundamentally, we have to increase supply. We also have to ensure affordability. But we need to get each. There isn't a singular answer to the housing crisis. The answer resides in getting each of the elements right and ensuring that they move in.
But if you have increased state investment, a lot of that depends on having the revenues coming in, particularly the tax revenues. Mm. How concerned are you by what you've seen in a lot of analysis by independent economists over the last week who are looking not just at your spending plans, but also Fine Gael's and Fianna Fáil's, and are saying, whoa, this is making some heroic assumptions about the continuation of the corporation tax windfalls that we have, and associated to that, the income tax which comes from the multinationals. Because these multinationals are not just giving us up to 30 billion a year in corporation tax, they're accounting for more than half of the income tax that's paid
and
in the country as well.
No, I accept that. And I think it would be a very, very foolish person who didn't have a sense of, you know, revenue stability, levels of risk associated with any revenue stream. Of course, you have to do that. And let me put it to you this way. I mean, the surplus that we're running this year is real. That's real money. The Apple taxes, which the government heroically argued against receiving, that's real money too. We do have a buffer in terms of the rainy day fund, so-called. Our programme, Matt, envisages very ambitious investment, very necessary investment, but it also proposes to run a budget surplus year on year over a 5-year term of government.
But if those windfalls fall away...
And to set those aside.
If those windfalls fall away, an awful lot of the things you want to do can't be done unless you go and borrow enormous amounts of money or unless you start increasing taxes.
And the numbers that we are working within and the budgetary package that we are working within is provided to us by the Department of Finance. These aren't our figures, you know. These come from the Department of Finance. And just as we're discussing, you know, the profiling of risk and mitigating, the department does that. I also want to say this, because this conversation I know has been kind of turbocharged by Donald Trump returning to the
White House. What I was just about to get to, yes.
Yeah, I thought you might. Returning to the White House. And of course, you have to be conscious of what that means and what that can mean. But just remember, this isn't this president's first rodeo. He's been in the White House before.
Oh, but this is very different, Mary Lou. And this is him. Trump 2.0 looks like a different man to the one who went into office 8 years ago. And that this time he's a man with a plan who has all the people around him who are willing to implement it, unlike 8 years ago.
Sure. And I'm aware of all of that. But I would also make the point, when he was in office previously, corporate tax receipts here rose very considerably, I think by some 60%. We're going to have to engage that the Trump administration, whoever is in government, whoever is acting at Taoiseach, as Taoiseach. And that needs to be done in a constructive and a thoughtful way. Irish economic interests have to be protected. And of course, you need to have a sense of all of the dynamic that unfolds. But I really don't think that it is wise or helpful at all for us to talk up at this point a doomsday scenario, as I have heard some do. I don't think that's the way that you actually manage this set of circumstances. And final point, Matt, we have risks that we, not speculative, actual risk to our economy and our prospects for growth now. And the one consistent thing that has been raised with me and with Pierce and others over the last 2 years or more are infrastructural risks and deficits, and in particular, housing. So whatever way we go to work, that needs to be dealt with, because we know for certain that's an issue for us.
We're very much focusing on what Mary Lou would do if she was to become Taoiseach. So I want to bring you to March in Washington, and you get a meeting with President Donald Trump in the White House, in the Oval Office. So what would you say to him about Israel? Because you were very critical of Simon Harris in the RTE leaders' debate last Monday night for not getting in Joe Biden's face about America's support for Israel and Palestine. What would you say to Donald Trump, given that you also have to take into consideration not to anger him over issues like tariffs and relocation of multinational jobs?
You see, you don't have to get in anybody's face to say what needs to be said. So the message for the Biden administration, the Trump administration, or whomsoever might lead the American administration, is that Israel has to abide by international law. That's it. And arming Israel, an Israel that brazenly defies and breaks every rule in the book, and who, where we see with our own eyes the slaughter that's unfolding, a genocidal situation, continuing to arm Israel in those circumstances is wrong. It's, as a matter of fact, I think it's indefensible. There is nobody in the United States who would be one bit surprised for an Irish Taoiseach, actually of any stripe, Matt, making those points. They know what our position is. They know the position not just of recent governments, but they know the historic position of Ireland as regards Zionism, the Zionist project, the occupation of Palestinian lands, the dispossession of the Palestinian people. This is a long-playing matter.
But they see it very differently. And
they
particularly
do.
People in the Trump administration, the new US envoy to Israel, is a man who does not believe that there's a thing as a Palestinian person.
Yeah.
He doesn't believe in a two-state solution.
And he's wrong. And I mean, one of the great pities is that the United States, that has been so constructive, pivotal really, to the building of peace for our island. I mean, we wouldn't have had arguably a successful peace process without the United States of America, that having been and remaining so right on the Irish question, that they are calling it absolutely wrong in respect of the Palestinian question. And whoever is Taoiseach, those matters have to be placed on the record. And I was critical of Simon Harris, and I remain critical of him for not availing of the opportunity to simply state that reality to President Biden, who would not have been surprised. Pablo Sanchez from Spain was hot on Simon Harris's heels. He said what needed to be said.
You mentioned the peace process, and I don't want to go back into the history of all that, but I am interested in something that you and I have discussed previously on radio and television and in other conversations that we've had, that your primary objective in politics is a united Ireland. I wonder how many people who might be thinking of voting for Sinn Féin in the general election on issues like housing and health of other things would actually share your commitment to a united Ireland. Or is that something that you feel you would have a right to assume if you were to take up office?
Well, I don't think anybody who, you know, knows me or Sinn Féin would find it in any way surprising. I mean, we're very upfront. We're united Irelanders. And I actually think for lots of people now, including many, many people who either wouldn't have had a position at all on the constitutional question, or who would have been dubious as to its deliverability or its desirability, I think in increasing numbers now, people are engaging with the question. I would cite, for example, the fact that the Irish business community, North and South, has been very active on questions of the all-Ireland economy, the synergy of the economy, how to build it, how to grow it, and what reunification would mean. What would the economic benefit be? I think for trade unions, for civic organisations, there has always been a logic and a reality of working on an all-Ireland, on an all-Ireland basis. And I also think, and I know, you know, people can hold several thoughts at once. So, for example, just to, in your own life, you have to have an eye to how you pay the bills today, how you feed the children today. But you also have to plan how you're going to get them through college in 10 or 15 years' time. You and I both know that story, right? So I think in politics, and when people think about political life and they think about their country and what they want, I think people can, in the first instance, of course, be seized by the cost of living, the day-to-day pressures that they live with, the fact that we need to put roofs over people's heads, and at the same time can have a strong view, a strong interest and an aspiration for what kind of country they want to live in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years' time.
It's interesting because your manifesto focuses very much on things that you said over the last year and the way the numbers are changing and whether a border poll is actually brought about by the way the numbers change in the north. But are you making an assumption that there would be an automatic desire in the people of the south to actually vote for united Ireland? Does that, in your mind, almost go without saying that there would be an emotional decision made that, yes, everybody will go for it? Whereas perhaps there might be a little bit more resistance in the south than you might expect.
I don't think any of the research or polling data reflects anything other than very wide support for reunification. And certainly, if you're to believe all of the political parties, they all say, yes, we are committed to reunification, of course, democratically, peacefully, in an orderly fashion. I think where there is a necessary gap to be filled is a government now taking the initiative on this and actually starting the preparatory work. Like, I don't think anybody should be bounced on these questions. I think you have to, we are going to have to establish a citizens' assembly. We're going to have to publish a green paper. We need to inform the conversation and we need to engage as wide opinion as we can, including unionist opinion. But I do think that there is an urgency for purpose on this. I don't think people standing back and saying, well, we don't have a view or we're going to be inert or inactive
but
on
Mary
this
Lou,
issue
is good political. I was very struck by thinking, you know, as you think about green papers and a lot of technical process, but you did say there are things like trade unions and civic groups and business. I was very taken when I read through the United Ireland section that you had, and then I separately read through the sport section. And I was amazed that United Ireland didn't feature in sport, or sport didn't feature United Ireland.
For soccer.
Because Not just that, if you look at all of the sports across Ireland, with the exception of soccer, the vast majority of them are on a 32-county basis. Absolutely. And that's where people get to know each other. And that's where people get an understanding. And I was just sort of wondering why that wasn't reflected in the manifesto when you're talking more about processes and numbers.
That's the nature of manifestos. They're not kind of blockbuster, you know, nighttime read. You're not really bringing it to the beach if you're going anywhere.
No, I definitely didn't bring it to the beach.
So, no, they tend to be fairly dry affairs and fairly kind of technical in parts. But I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the sport, like, look at this, the GA, I suppose, being the exemplar, but rugby. I mean, look at the success our rugby team, men and women, have had.
Boxing, hockey, cricket. You look at the people who won Olympic medals for Ireland this year from the North competing for Ireland. Yeah,
and doesn't that showcase how we are at our very, very best when we're united in that way? And listen, the Good Friday Agreement is now, what, 26 years old? There is a point, and change has happened, and we have talked about this, Matt, you know, politically, demographically, the change is underway, and the challenge at any good government now worth its salt will consciously navigate and manage this from here, not walk away from it and say, well, no, we're not talking about that, or we're not doing it.
Mary Lou, your health has been an issue over the last year that you've spoken about in a number of interviews. But what I want to ask you about is, you said in one interview that your personal experience has given you a new appreciation for those who care for people across health systems. And one thing I asked you, did you go public or private for your health treatment?
I have private health insurance, so I was fortunate in that regard. Yeah.
You think that you got a better treatment and outcome as a result of having private health insurance?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I've heard so many people who have had incredibly good experience through the public health service. So no, I wouldn't say necessarily that I had. I mean, I not to get into all of the details, but I had to be seen to quite quickly.
Yeah.
So I suppose I think it helped in that regard. I'm conscious of people who are on waiting lists for a very, very long time. Although we are now at a point where even having private health insurance doesn't save you from waiting lists either, necessarily.
And there's more than 2 million people who have private health insurance in Ireland. Is that the way you would see that it will always be?
No, not always. I mean, our goal has to be a public health service, free at the point of delivery, funded by general taxation. I think in reality, there will probably always be a space in which there is private provision. And do you know what? I think we can live with that. But I think our goal and our aim has to be to have a functioning, fully resourced public health system. I think our best opportunity to build that, by the way, Matt, is in fact island wide. And I also know lots of people have private health insurance literally as an insurance policy. People feel that if it comes to it and you need to get access to the system, if you can afford the insurance at all, you pay for it as an extra protection or whatever it might be. I don't detect in the Irish population anybody who would be against the notion of a functioning and fully resourced public system. But people know from experience that that has not been the case, that it has been short-funded, short-changed, and all of the consequent weights and so on that arise from it.
I also want to ask you about the legal action that you're taking against RTE. I mean, how appropriate is it that the leader of a political party who could be the Taoiseach with responsibility for RTE has an outstanding legal action against the station?
Well, look, I mean, I'm in public life, you know, a long time, and I am at this juncture and have always been, you know, largely philosophical about the slings and arrows of commentary and criticism and even hostility, Matt, you know. But there are moments where the line is crossed, and I'm not any different to any other citizen in, you know, defending my right to defend my reputation or my standing. And I think that's only fair. I mean, when you're in public life, there's lots of things that you need to just suck up, and that's okay. But there are moments where lines are crossed and...
Well, I do remember Bertie Ahern going into court as Taoiseach in an action that he took against a private individual who had given information to a Sunday newspaper, the Business Post. Could you see yourself as Taoiseach actually going into court and taking an action against RTE, a station that the government has responsibility for funding and on which you would be appearing regularly as Taoiseach?
Well, look, I think the easy way around all of this is that we all respect and adhere to the law. I mean, I can assure you the very last thing that I want, I think the last thing that any sensible person would want is to be wrapped up in legal actions against anyone. I have plenty on my plate. So I'm quite happy to, I'll play by the rules. I will absolutely respect all of that, respect journalists, absolute right to ask questions, to challenge, to criticise, all of that. But just don't be defamatory. You're professionals. You know that there is a line. And I think you can have lively debate, huge criticism, sometimes merited, other times perhaps not. But nonetheless, all within that space. But like there are rules and we play by them.
You mentioned also in a podcast recently, you spoke about the Free State establishment. And this was in reference to being asked about things from the IRA past, which is not what I want to ask you about. I want you to define for me, what is the Free State establishment?
So the podcast itself is called Free State. Yeah. It's Joe Brawley and
Dion Fanning.
So,
yeah.
Dion Fanning. So it was a play on words. The establishment, I would very easily define that as those who have always held and exercised power in this state. In party political terms, that's Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. The people, the lads who have run everything from top to bottom, and it seems to me who believe that they and they alone should continue to run things from top to bottom. That's who I mean. That's who they are.
Okay, because people would think beyond that you might be meaning the likes of the media, which some of your supporters might call the mainstream media, or even the Gardaí or the judiciary, the people that maybe Sinn Féin and IRA previously have come into conflict with over the years. If you were in power, would you look to settle scores with the establishment?
Well, I'm in no conflict with any member of the bench, anybody who's on the bench, or any member of An Garda Síochána Síochána. Actually, on the contrary, I mean, my contact with I'm generally looking for more Gardaí. I want more of them on our streets. I want more of them in our communities. And we're going to have to try and train and retain more of them. Absolutely not. Look at, you know, this, we live at a time of a lot of the challenges that I've outlined for you. But we're in a moment in history where we have resources and we have opportunities that we haven't had before. I want us to grasp those. I want us to make the most of this moment to actually get things right for everybody.
A couple of things just to finish up, Mary Lou MacDonald. I want to go back to international affairs, particularly Ukraine, because that impacts so much on Ireland with about 100,000 people living in the country who are refugees from Ukraine. And I know it's there in black and white in the manifesto, and your party members have said it regularly, that you condemn the Russian invasion of Ukraine. However, the way some of the things in the manifesto were almost wishy-washy in the condemnation or how you actually managed to sort this out, and saying things, no more guns and weapons into Ukraine. But as an Irish Republican, surely you would have sympathy with the Ukrainians needing to defend themselves against this Russian aggressor, which is not in the mood for talking.
Putin is absolutely the aggressor. And Ukrainians have the right to defend their sovereignty. I couldn't be clearer about it. I deplore Vladimir Putin and everything, frankly, that he stands for. But I don't think anybody could view with anything other than real, real concern and fear long-range missiles, be they British or American, going into Russia. That represents an escalation of this conflict.
The Russians had sent the North Korean troops in to escalate.
I hold no candle for them. I'm not talking about, I'm not speaking from that perspective at all. Please understand me. You see, as a non-aligned, neutral state and nation, I believe that this country and our government need to bring our perspective to bear on international affairs. I think we need to take a stand informed by who we are and what we know works. And this conflict, the same as any other, will in the end be straightened out by a blend of diplomacy, politics and international law. Those are the pillars that sort this out. I want nothing more than for Ukrainians who are here and who are welcome here, but to have the opportunity to go home. Bear in mind, this war is not without consequences. Lives, most of them young, are being lost in the course of this. It cannot go on indefinitely. And the international effort now has to be to bring it to an end and to restore Ukrainian sovereignty and to...
Okay, one final thing that I want to bring up with you. You've got a television debate tomorrow night against Micheál Martin and Simon Harris. Is this going to be a repeat of 2020 when it was obviously Leo Varadkar inside of Simon Harris in that you will be the victim of the two lads ganging up on you? Is this something that actually is going to, in your mind, play to your advantage tomorrow night when you make the arguments that you will be seen there on your own against the two lads tag-teaming?
That can only happen if the two lads actually gang up on me. I never play the victim card. I am nobody's victim, as you know. I am a very, very resolute person, and I am absolutely sure that this election is all to play for. And I happen to believe that the prospect now of a government led by Sinn Féin, a government beyond Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, is really a live, live option. So that's what's on my mind going into this debate.
The last question is, you got 24.5% of the first preference vote in the last election. Given that you have spent the last 4.5 years criticising the performance of the government, would it be a failure on the part of Sinn Féin if you were not to surpass that performance in this election?
Well, obviously, I hope that we will. And I mean, we're running 71 candidates, really, really good slate of candidates. And we're asking people to come out and support them. I'm aware that there are candidates beyond us who are also talking about.
But to not get beyond 24.5%, would that represent a failure of your last 4.5 years?
I want to get well beyond that. I mean, for me, I want a new government. I want us to change the government. And we now have, 4 days to get that done. And, you know, for people who might be thinking of looking for change and voting elsewhere, maybe for independence and so on, I would just invite them to kind of reflect a little bit tactically. If you want the government out, Sinn Féin's the vehicle to make that
happen.
So
your real opponents at the moment are the independents, as much as Fine Gael, is it?
I'm speaking just very, very frankly. My job and our objective is to change the government. That needs to happen. And I believe that we can make that happen.
Mary Lou McDonald, leader of Sinn Féin, thank you very much for being with us here on The Last Word.
The Last Word on Today FM.